Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're going to try to unravel this whole unlock the box and look at this fairly complicated issue of cable boxes. You know, I had no idea until this all became an issue that most of us spend $231 a year to rent cable boxes. That's a lot of money, and it's a whole lot of money for these cable companies, mostly Comcast and Time Warner. They take in $20 billion in annual revenue for cable, satellite, and telephone companies and on these. Isn't that amazing? So the machines aren't very easy to use. Sometimes they don't work, and you can get some programming on your television set, but if you're using other kinds of apps, you can't get it on your TV set. You get it on your phone, or maybe you get it on your iPad or your computer, and it's all kind of complicated, right? Well, it's my understanding that last month, the chair of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, proposed new regulations for all of this. It was passed by the commission, and now there's a whole period of public comment. It would require cable companies to accommodate competing devices, and I believe that it will also free up this whole industry so you can buy these boxes outright rather than having to rent them as we used to have to do from Ma Bell. To guide us through all of this, and I'm sure many of you see this as a complex issue as well and would like to talk about it, Joshua Stagger is our guest. Joshua is policy counsel at the Open Technology Institute. He specializes in telecommunications law and policy. He's focused on efforts to protect net neutrality and preserve the open internet. He was Senator Al Franken's law fellow on the Senate Judiciary Committee, where he focused on telecommunications, antitrust, commercial privacy, and surveillance policy. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. I think we'll get many of them on this issue because we're all, you know, creatures of 2016 and we've got this high-tech technology. But the regulation may not be very high-tech. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Joshua, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So tell me exactly, because I even find the wording of all of this a little bit confusing, what was proposed and I believe passed by the Federal Communications Commission last month? It had to do with the rental of boxes, but also had to do with content. Is that right?
Right, right. You know, I think you give a pretty good summary there, but you're right. It is, the wording is somewhat complicated, but really what the focus of the regulations are is on what's called the set-top box, or commonly known as the cable box. So that's the device that most people rent from their cable provider. It's that box that sits under the TV. You plug in the cable from the wall into the box, then another cable from the box into the TV to get the channels that you're subscribing to.
Mm-hmm.
So 99% of all consumers rent these boxes from their cable providers for at a pretty high cost. As you said, it's an average of $232 annually. And that cost is actually going up at three times the rate of inflation.
Ooh.
Yeah. So what the FCC is trying to do here is unleash competition and innovation in a market that really hasn't seen either in decades. Set-top boxes, unlike the rest of the consumer electronics world, which is constantly evolving, they really look like a blast from the past. They haven't changed much over the past 20 years. And when you see them, of course, they're kind of cumbersome, they're
yes.
difficult to use, they're expensive.
Yes.
And they're actually very energy inefficient. They, in some cases, drain as much electricity as a refrigerator.
That's unbelievable.
Right, right. So these are all signs that the market for these devices is badly broken. And in the face of that market failure, the FCC is trying to step in to create some standards and create some rules to open up competition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a pretty light-touch form of government intervention. They're not going in and saying, okay, we're going to create a government-mandated box or tell the cable companies what they should be charging for the box. They're simply saying, look, right now there is no market for this. If you're a consumer, you pretty much don't have a choice. You just rent the box that you get from the cable provider. So maybe we should introduce some competition here, and that can help save consumers some money. Maybe there'd be some more innovative devices that are easier to use.
Mm-hmm.
So what the commission did last month was voted to begin a rulemaking proceeding. The SEC, it's its own creature, somewhat different from Congress. So unlike Congress, where, you know, they pass a bill, and as long as the president signs it, it becomes law, the SEC has a slightly different process that they go through. So they start by voting on a proposal, and that vote opens it up to public comment.
Mm-hmm.
And after that public comment period is open for a while, they go back, look at the feedback they've gotten, and then vote on final rules. And they can't put anything in the final rules that they didn't get some sort of feedback from the public about, saying, hey, we want this done. That's where we're at now. We're about to start the public comment process, where the SEC is soliciting feedback from really anybody, saying, what do you think of this plan? What do you think of your set-top boxes? What can we do to fix it?
So if you were to open it up to competition, please tell me what alternatives we might see. Instead of that black box, we could rent it if we wanted to. We could keep doing that. Or we could. Has the technology been developed yet or not?
In some cases, it's been developed, or there have been companies that want to develop it. But it is really also about unleashing innovation and new types of technologies that maybe don't exist yet.
I see.
So it's about, in one way, giving you an alternative so you don't have to rent the box from your cable provider, and possibly just go down to the local store and buy a box.
Mm.
Because a lot of these boxes, you know, if they were sold in the retail market, might only cost a couple $100s.
Oh.
And as you mentioned, if you're spending on average $230 a year just to rent it, over the course of a few years, you have consumers investing thousands into these products, but without any ownership. So realistically, what you could just have is have people own the device and have a device that works on all cable providers. You take it with you. Doesn't require a lot of different cords.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that the cable companies are allowed to rent you these and have been doing so for such a long time? How has that been legal?
Well, you know, it really comes down to a lot of the quasi-monopoly business models that the cable providers have enjoyed for quite a long time. This issue is not actually new on the radar screens for the federal government. 20 years ago, Congress passed a law directing the FCC to promote competition in this equipment market. It was evident even 20 years ago that there were problems here. The FCC tried with a different kind of proposal, a sort of hardware-based proposal called Cable Card, that said, you know, there's this sort of like a little disc that you could plug into a box, and as long as people have that, they could plug it into different boxes and it would work for anybody, for any cable provider. And that process never really worked out. I'm sure a few of your listeners have ever heard of Cable Card. It was a very cumbersome process. TiVo has created boxes that use it, but you have to rent the cable card for a monthly fee from your cable provider. It requires lots of visits, usually, to come out to your home and set it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have to buy them that box. So the process itself really wasn't any easier than just renting the box from your provider. So what the FCC is proposing now is to move away from a hardware kind of approach and shift to a software-based approach. So you don't have to get some sort of cable card. All you have to do is buy a device. Maybe it's a Roku. Maybe it's an Apple TV. And that device will have the software in it to work with your cable company.
Mm-hmm. So that means, I don't know if all of this is related or not, but here's the story. I know a lot of people, and there are a lot of people, who are binge-watching all of these series that are coming about, but they're not on your cable. They're on Netflix, or they're on some outlet like that. And, you know, for the life of me, I can't figure out. Maybe there is no way. When our youngest boy was at home, he used to have some kind of Xbox or something like that. He would hook up, and then you could put Netflix on the TV and watch House of Cards. But he's not there anymore, and so I watch it on my iPad. I prefer to watch it on my television set. So would all of these proposed changes allow all of those things that you get via an app or a service that you're paying for allow you to watch it on TV?
That's the hope.
I see.
So with devices like the Xbox or Roku or Apple TV, they do offer a lot of streaming services like Netflix, but they are an incomplete service because, of course, you can't access the programming you get through your cable provider through those boxes.
Oh, okay.
Despite the fact that all of those manufacturers would very much like to offer that. So that's why they're sort of being used as complementary devices that sit right next to the set-top box. And, you know, the goal here is to have those devices be a replacement for the set-top box rather than simply buy a bunch of other devices. Just have one does it all. So you can search across all platforms.
Right.
And that can be Netflix. That could be what you get from Comcast, Charter, whoever your provider is. But interestingly, it could also be online content, such as YouTube. So if you were to search just for comedy, you might get, you know, sitcoms like Modern Family and programs that are on Netflix. But maybe you also get programming that's only been posted on services like YouTube. There's a lot of programmers and people who have been trying to create content that can't work with the studios, so they've just been posting it online, hoping that you find it.
I see.
A truly next-generation set-top device would enable you to search across all these platforms and perhaps discover new content as well.
Well, it would also require cooperation among the various businesses like Comcast, Time Warner, and the tech companies, Google, Amazon, and others. Are they likely to say, oh, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's all work together and do this?
Well, unfortunately, that's not the case. So that's what the FCC and many have been hoping would happen for 20 years. And, in fact, in 2008, Comcast went to the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. It's the big annual show where all the tech companies show off their latest gadgets for the year and said, hey, we're all about getting rid of the set-top box. We're going to create something that's a third-party device that works across all platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And it never actually happened, as any Comcast customer can tell you. And, you know, a lot of this is that this has become a real cash cow for the cable industry. What, you know, not that long ago was maybe a de minimis item on your monthly bill has become a huge monthly rental fee. So a lot of people, you know, they buy their bundle. Maybe it's telephone, internet, and cable all in one. Maybe it seems like a decently good price. Then they get their first monthly bill, and it's a lot higher than they expected.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times because there was that set-top box fee added on. And that set-top box fee has been going up. It's now an estimated $20 billion a year
revenue stream
for the cable industry. So they have every incentive to protect that business model. You know, it's of course, they're dealing with cord cutters and people that are trying whatever they can to completely get rid of their cable subscription. So in the face of potentially losing that revenue stream, they're looking for any other way they can to make up for that. And set-top box rental fees have been a very successful way for them to generate new revenue.
It's sort of like renting your phone, right, which we had to do forever.
Exactly, and that's exactly the model that the FCC is hoping to replicate here. So you used to have to rent a telephone from AT&T. In the middle part of the 20th century, that was your only option, and the devices were pretty expensive. And then in 1968, the FCC stepped in and said, this isn't right. And in a decision called the Carter Phone decision, Carter Phone being an alternative device that AT&T said, nope, you can't connect this to our phone network. You can't use it. The FCC stepped in and said, no, you have to. And what that unleashed was an incredible amount of competition, new devices. Now that's why you can buy any telephone you want and hook it up to whatever telephone system you have and don't have to worry about it being interoperable. That also led to, you know, the cell phone revolution of the 1990s. And that's actually what enabled Apple to, a decade ago, enter this market, create a new device, the iPhone, that produced a lot of, you know, innovation and a lot of consumer benefits. It was in this case, we want to replicate that in the cable market. They're hoping that by having more device competition, that set-top boxes could be the next wave of innovation.
Mm-hmm.
When the iPhone was created, you know, that didn't just create an easier way for people to text and watch videos through smartphones. It created the app economy. It created a new platform for small businesses and job creation for this new thing called apps. If we can introduce new competition into the set-top box market, hopefully that can be a new platform for job creation and new small businesses. And it's that potential that the FCC is trying to unleash with this rulemaking.
So how can these big companies, these big cable companies particularly, and Google, who are going to be fighting this, and they're making gobs and gobs of money, aren't they? And they have all these lobbyists. They employ all these people to lobby members of Congress to keep this from happening. Are they on steady ground here or not?
Well, that's the big question. So the forces really working against this it's the cable industry. It's specifically the companies like Comcast, like AT&T, like Charter. And on the other side of it, the tech companies like Google are actually they asked the FCC to do this. They want this to happen. So Google is trying to get into the business through Google Fiber of offering residential services in several cities, and they have plans to go across the country. And they found that there was no existing set-top box that provided the services that they wanted, so they had to create their own. So Google is an example of a company that's very much promoting this. But even with a company like Google that is supportive of this, the political prospects for this this rulemaking are very uncertain because, as you said, there is so much political power from the telecom industry here in Washington. We saw 2 years ago with the net neutrality rulemaking, that was one of the rare examples of grassroots activism overcoming the power of the cable lobby here in D.C. For many years, you know, the FCC knew what the right thing to do was on net neutrality, but didn't feel like they had the political cover to do so. When they were to, the cable industry told them, look, if you pass strong net neutrality rules, it'll be World War III. We'll make life very difficult for you by going to our allies on Capitol Hill. That that can mean bringing up the chairman of the FCC for oversight hearings, which is exactly what they did last year. They brought him up, I think, 14 or 15 times to grill him in front of Congress. That can mean slashing their budget. There's always this implicit threat anytime they go against the cable industry's desires. So what happened in 2014 on the net neutrality rulemaking was that finally the FCC had robust public support on their side, a record-breaking 4 million Americans submitted comments in that rulemaking to the FCC saying, we want strong net neutrality rules. We want you to go against the cable interests here and support consumers. And with that wind at their sails, the FCC can now go up to Congress, and when they are being grilled in oversight hearings, say, look, we have the American people on our side. This isn't, we aren't unelected bureaucrats just run amok. We're doing what the American people asked us to.
And
so
it's hard.
Now we're here again with the new rulemaking, and there's hopes that the American people will similarly speak out and say,
well, it's hard to believe they wouldn't, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls. I'm sure we're going to get quite a few of them. Unlock the Box is what we're talking about this hour of the program, and you've just heard Joshua explain all that's involved in it. Joshua Stagger is a policy counsel at the Open Technology Institute. His specialty is telecommunications law and policy, and he's focusing on efforts to protect net neutrality and preserve the open internet. We're looking at this rental fee that we're paying, and it's gone up in the last, you know, 10 or so years, 185% to rent one of these boxes. And the darn things don't work very long sometimes, too. Have you noticed that? You got it, and then it doesn't work, and you got to bring it back and get another one. So it's a combination of things going on. You'd be able to get these boxes, and because it would open up the market, they could be more sophisticated, and you might be able to get some of the things that you can only get on apps on this new box that you'd be able to go to a store and buy the, your very own box, so you wouldn't have to rent it. Well, it's in the public comment phase. It was passed by the Federal Communications Commission just very recently, and now public comments are being taken. What do you think? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show, and we'll be with you so you can be with our guest in just a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Joshua. Mike in La Crosse, our first caller. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I guess my first observation is it just amazes me that it's taken so long for people to, it amazes me that people haven't caught on to this, especially ever since most of our televisions all now can carry digital signals that are, literally have hundreds of channels. And that was the question I put to my cable company probably about 8 years ago when I got my first digital television set when they wanted me to get this box. And I said, well, my television is digital. Program the channels to come through the open digital channels. And, of course, they didn't do that. And so I ended the service and got my and took my internet business as well as my television business elsewhere. And I get everything I want, put it through my Apple box, or my, you know, through the Air feature on my iPhone or iPad into the Apple box and then put it through my television. And I can watch Showtime, Netflix, HBO, you name it, it's all there.
Hmm. And where do you get that box? Is that something you just go to the electronics store and
Apple
get one
Apple Box, Radio Shack, Best Buy. And they're on about the third generation. They've probably been out for at least somewhere between six to ten years.
Is it complicated, John? I mean, Mike?
No, you just need to back your digital television. There's a place where you'd plug in an HDMI cable, and that's the Apple box. The Apple box, and it's a small box. It's the size of about two decks of cards.
Really?
One deck put on top of another,
huh.
And then it has its own separate remote. And there's other ones that don't have to go with Apple. Samsung and other companies make a similar box that uses an Android-type platform or some other software, not Apple software.
Yeah, so why aren't we all doing this, Joshua?
Well, you know, that the process that, you know, he just explained, it's one that a lot of cord cutters have pursued, but it's also pretty time-consuming and pretty complicated.
Is it?
So, and when you have a lot of different devices, that can be, you know, somewhat discouraging. So the goal here, I think, is you mentioned that the Apple device that you have, I have one of those myself, but the Apple case is very interesting because Apple has been trying for over a decade to truly disrupt this market for set-top boxes, and the Apple TV device that they now sell was sort of a compromise from what they originally wanted. They've wanted for a long time to really sell a TV that has all of these features integrated within it. And they tried to negotiate with the cable companies and the programmers for many, many years to offer that service, much like they had to negotiate with the wireless providers to get the iPhone to the market. And they were not successful. And it really is demonstrative of just how badly government intervention is needed here when a company as large and successful as Apple mm-hmm. was not able to disrupt this market.
Isn't it ironic that here we are in this age where we've got thousands of channels, we've got all these series happening, we've got all this information at a time when everybody says we need so much information. Granted, some of it is not worth very much, but some of it is. And now we have all these problems trying to get a hold of the information. You got to go through hoops to get it to your eyes.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, this does connect back to the net neutrality debate, which was about the free flow of information
right.
and data in a neutral manner, and that was about the network itself. But what this debate really shows in set-top boxes is that it what also matters is the device that you use to connect to the network, whether that network is the Internet or your cable system.
Mm-hmm.
So if that device is anti-competitive and discriminatory, it doesn't really matter if the network is neutral.
Right. Well, Mike, thank you very much. And you say you've been doing this for how long?
Well, I've had the Apple box now for probably four or more years, but before that I was just using Microsoft PC to play my Netflix through my television here again with the HDMI cable and
right.
and you can YouTube or any other type of video or Pandora music, you name it, you just pump it right, just put it right through your right into your television from your iPad, your smartphone. Doesn't have to be an Apple. All the smartphones and all the computer paddles, there's a way to hook them up to the back of a smart TV.
Mm-hmm.
And now even the televisions, a lot of them are basically they have a computer in them. You don't even need those things. You just subscribe to the services that you want and have your internet connected up to your television.
Yeah, is that the way? Thank you very much for the call. What about those smart TVs? Are they something that everybody's got now, or a lot of people have now, Joshua?
They've definitely become increasingly popular, but because they lack a lot of the same functionality that some of these other devices that we mentioned, like the Apple TV and Roku, the failures that they have, where they still don't connect to your cable provider without some other separate device. So
oh.
You know, I have a smart TV. I can use some of the apps on there. It occasionally helps maybe to access Netflix, but at the end of the day, I still can't use it to connect to the channels that I'm paying to subscribe with Comcast.
Yeah. Oh, my. Thanks very much, Mike, for the call. Let's go to John in Madison. Hi, John.
Well, I have two parts. First is I used to install cable 20 years ago, and the boxes were converters from digital to analog for older TVs, but most TVs were cable ready and programmable, and you didn't need the box. And that's like 9 out of 10 of them 20 years ago.
Hmm.
So has technology regressed since then, or is this a different kind of box? And the other thing is there's an alternative out there of having no cable, no dish at all, and just using the converter box. So to me, the real issue is stronger signal over the air and more channels for free. And, you know, you can bypass cable completely. But are these the same boxes that I used to install 20 years ago, or is this some new kind of box? Because hardly anybody has those older TVs anymore.
Right. Well, so to address your first question, in some ways the boxes are a different technology because many of the set-top devices that consumers are now renting from their cable providers also function as DVRs, as video recording devices. So they do have some functionality that, you know, the older boxes lacked. But from all the different types of, you know, alternatives that you proposed there, all of them have potential, but the problem now is all of the terms for those types of devices are dictated by your cable provider. So only if they deem it in their best interest to offer that kind of technology will consumers be able to access it. Because of the clear market failures going on in this industry, it's really going to take some kind of government intervention to create open standards for this technology so that then third parties can come in and create the kinds of converter boxes and any other kind of alternative device that they might think is interesting to consumers and then put that on the market so consumers can buy it. But right now, we don't live in that environment.
No. Yeah, thanks very much, John, for the call. And tell me who creates that environment. Now we've got the FCC who's made this proposal. Congress will, there's this open period of listening to what the public has to say. Then Congress makes some decision. What happens from here?
Sure. So after the public comment period ends, the FCC can revisit the topic and vote on final rules based on what they heard from public feedback. And once, if they approve final rules, then, you know, that has the force of federal law, and it's a regulation on the books. Congress has no formal role here, but because they control the FCC's budget and because they still are a legislating body, they can go back and pass a law that would repeal anything that the FCC does. And they certainly have in the past tried to do that on a variety of regulations. And just the mere suggestion of this set-top box proposal has already produced some rumors in Congress that some member of Congress might introduce a bill already to preempt the FCC's ability to do anything
really?
About this. Yes. In some cases, it could just be the form of a bill that bars the FCC from doing anything. A more blunt instrument that Congress sometimes uses is attaching language to their budget. So when Congress passes the budget for the FCC, they attach language that says, by the way, you can't use any of these funds to do anything about set-top box reform or net neutrality or broadband in local communities, whatever it is that Congress decides is not something that they want the FCC to be doing. So that's something to look out for if
right.
the FCC does indeed pass final rules on this topic later this year.
Yeah. And what about the content? If you have more content, are there concerns, and if so, what are they, when it comes to copyright, when it comes to making sure people are paid for their artistic work?
Sure. So that, you know, that argument has started to come up quite a bit ever since the FCC talked about this from the cable companies, saying that this could be somehow infringe copyright protections without really explaining why. This may have been the case 10 years ago where the technology wasn't quite up to the point where they could protect copyright, but as some of the devices like Apple TV and smart TVs have really demonstrated, they've figured out technology already that can preserve the copyright protections. The concern here is, you know, when you pay your cable company for cable subscription, you're not just paying them for access to the channels, you're paying that cable company for all the contracts that they have signed with other programmers to get access to programming from the big studios, from the networks. And all that programming, of course, is protected by copyright law because it's intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
All the FCC is proposing here is saying, create a standard, create a technology that makes that content available in a secure way that protects all of the intellectual property rights that you care about, but just makes it available for a third-party device to access.
Let's go to Mike next in Edgerton. Hello, Mike.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good, Mike. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Mike, I have a few things I'd like to know. You know, when we get the black box, because I have Charter, One of the things with it is you can't have any other TVs hooked up to it, so you have to pay so much for each box.
Mm-hmm.
And really, when I get the service in the black box, it would seem that I should be able to hook up to other TVs, but I can't. And then on the, they've never explained to me what the broadcast charges are. They went from like a dollar something now to eight something. And then the last thing I have to comment on, and then I'm going to let go because then I'll wait for it on air.
Okay.
Is all the number of commercials we have on regular TV. Basically, I get 5 minutes of TV, but then I get 5 minutes of commercials.
That's all my comment,
and thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Are there limits now? I know there were in the past. We had to have so much content and so many minutes of commercials. I'm sure there are some rules on that, aren't there, Joshua?
There are some limits on the content within the advertising, but there are no limits that I'm aware of on the proportion of the programming that is dedicated to advertising.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. But, on his first point about just how opaque his cable bill is, that's a problem. He's a Charter customer, but that's pretty much any cable customer, I think, could relate to his concerns there. And it's what he's describing, the inability to connect the box to other devices, all of these frustrations that people have, they're really pretty basic frustrations. I, for a long time, struggled with the menu on my cable box, and I remember after several years, my cable provider sent me a letter saying we have a great new innovation to make the menu easier to deal with. We're going to alphabetize all of the categories of the programs. That's the kind of innovation you got after several years was just alphabetical order. with the energy inefficiency too, it's by some estimates it takes 4 nuclear power plants to power the amount of electricity that the nation's set-top boxes use.
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding me.
It's not like these boxes are doing anything that complicated. They're not splitting the atom in there. They shouldn't require this much electricity. A lot of these things that people say, like, why doesn't this box work better? Why is it this hard? It doesn't need to be that hard. And the answer really is a lack of competition. The cable providers simply have no incentive to make the box better because they know you most likely don't have any other real alternatives to go to. And even if you are one of the lucky Americans who do have the ability to go to another cable provider, they basically now all offer the same business model. So the problems that you have with one will likely be the same problems you encounter with another provider.
Just makes you want to throw your hands up, doesn't it, and go, woo!
Right. Well, and many consumers have directed that consumer rage at their cable companies. When you go to some of these customer service centers to return these boxes or to pay your bills, what you find when you get there is that you interact with an employee behind bulletproof glass. You're doing something wrong as a company when you can only interact with your customers face-to-face between bulletproof glass.
Yeah, I would say so. Oh, that's worth a pause to think about that. Oh, my. Mike, thanks very much for your call. Gary, our phone number, by the way, in case you were wondering, you wanted to get through, it's 800-486-8655. Gary in Fitchburg, hi.
Hi. It's disturbing. If one is, has a higher degree of intelligence and awareness, and you pay for 200 channels, and you flip through and flip through and flip through, and seldom are there things worthy of my attention. It makes me wonder if the companies, the big six companies that control everything we read, everything we see, basically here, if they purposely set it up with terrible programming so people flip through, flip through, flip through, in the process get pounded with these commercials for all this stupid stuff we don't need anyway, like in particular pharmaceuticals. But is there any hope for an alternative to the programming we have now, which is, swamp people? No thanks.
What do you want? What kind of program do you want, Gary?
Well, think of the wisdom that's available in the world today.
Right.
In so many different areas. Scenic things, alternatives to violence, So many programs are, you know, criminal shows, cops, and jail, and it's just absurd that we have to be subjected to this kind of substandard information.
Okay, Joshua.
Sure. So, you know, I think you raise a really good point about the menu listings and just how much content there is now and how much of it you don't really even care to watch. And you're right on that the cable providers have sometimes used that to pursue interests that are not necessarily in their customers' best interest. So, for example, Comcast owns NBC Universal, which is a lot of programming as well. So in that case, you know, they're not just a cable company, they're also providing the content. And a few years ago, what was happening was they were taking this listing of the hundreds and hundreds of channels that you have and using it to prioritize the channels that Comcast actually owned. So they used to have to put certain channels in genres of called neighborhoods, and the news channels had to all be in a certain news neighborhood. But once Comcast bought NBC, they owned CNBC and MSNBC. So what they did was they put that in a more lucrative news neighborhood, and they took the Bloomberg channel, which is obviously a competitor to CNBC, and they moved it up in the nosebleeds, and
right,
a part of the menu where they know that many consumers don't even see it's there. So they actually had Bloomberg had to go and do a whole challenge at the FCC, and it took several years and a lot of money to finally get them to agree to move that back into a neighborhood where their customers would actually see the channel.
Thanks very much for the call. We'll take more in a moment. Our phone number, our guest first, is Joshua Stagger. He is policy counsel at the Open Technology Institute, specializes in telecommunications law and policy. And we are talking about the Unlock the Box, which the FCC has passed. And now it's in a period of public comments. There are a couple things at play here. Actually, we don't know all that would be in play. It would open up this whole industry to a little bit more competition. We spend a huge amount of money, $231 a year, to rent a cable box, which is bringing in $2 billion to cable companies. And then, so that's happening. This would be something where you could go and get the box on your own, like you buy a telephone now and you don't have to go through a cable company. They're also, can you believe that? They use as much electricity as in a refrigerator, one of the cable boxes? That's unbelievable. And then there's this other question of being able to get some information through other kinds of sources like Amazon or Netflix that you can do on your TV and do it all with one box or a small box or something that's not a box, or open it all up so that places like Google and Amazon and others can have their content on cable. But that's a big fight, too, so who knows if that'll happen. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. We'll take your phone calls, more of them in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an email that has come in from Kay in Shawnee County. We have the smart TV and a Roku, she says, for streaming Netflix. We also watch the local digital channels, no satellite. Our biggest problem is that we're in a rural area. The highest internet speed offered by our ISP is 1G. Streaming shows varies. It can work great one moment and not work at all the next. Any suggestions for those without high-speed internet?
Well, that's a great question, and it's a problem that's facing many, many rural Americans. In many ways, the build-out of broadband internet that proliferated so quickly in the 90s and the early part of this century has really stalled out in rural America, and it's very analogous to where we were at with electrification about 100 years ago, where the electric grid built out, but then they stopped when it reached rural areas that were not necessarily cost-effective for private industry to build into. The way we solved the problem then, 100 years ago, by getting everyone electrified was to have government intervention and to have government-sponsored build-outs. So in a lot of rural areas where they either have very slow service or, in many cases, no service at all, there have been a surging interest in what's called municipal broadband. So this is where instead of going to a cable company, an internet provider, private provider, go to City Hall, go to your county, and ask them to actually build the networks themselves. A lot of people don't realize that many cities actually have experience doing this. They build smart grid technology to connect their own facilities to and fiber optic cables to connect the streetlights. And that, what's called dark fiber, could also be used to sell internet services to residences through a public company. Many places have tried to do this with great success. Chattanooga, Tennessee is one of the big success stories where they found that they just weren't getting good enough service. The city built their own network, and it offers much, much faster and cheaper service than what that you can find in big cities all around America. Unfortunately, however, we've seen already a big industry pushback where many of the incumbent players are worried that this type of public competition would eventually encroach on their markets and the territories that they have. There's actually a big lawsuit going on right now over the FCC's ability to promote this. In Wisconsin, they have effectively gone to the state legislature and told them to put a restriction on municipal broadband efforts. If any municipality in Wisconsin wants to look into its own municipal network, they have to do a basically three-year feasibility study. It's really just a three-year delay. And in that time, that gives the incumbent providers time to file lawsuits, to get involved in the local government, and try to stop that network from getting off the ground. So it's a real problem in rural America, and the key is really realizing that it's a political problem, and it is a policy problem at this point. The answer is not going to come from the private providers that exist in many other cities right now. For years, many rural communities have been begging these private companies to come in and invest, and they have refused to do so.
Hmm. Let's go to Jesse in Indiana. Hi, Jesse.
Yeah, hi. I'm just calling. I don't want to take you guys too far off topic because I know you're talking about the Dish Network and all those set-top boxes. I personally unplugged about 16 years ago, and I find I'm much better off for it. I'd like to talk about something that your previous caller had said about the lack of good programming. And I think as an American society, you know, and as a global society, we need to be inspired to create our own cultures within our communities. I think too much these days we've been essentially consumers instead of producers of our own culture, and that's led to a lack of creativity within our own small communities. Like in my hometown, like I don't have a TV, but that does not mean I have a lack of outlets to go see creative things like music and dance and whatnot. Like mm-hmm. we have this in our community and have access to it, and we create it. And I think something that probably America and people are just striving for in general is the ability to find that within ourselves to pull away from being consumers and start being producers again.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like these fees and whatnot just entrap people into cycles of debt even more as well. You know, I find that I really am happy about the money in my wallet that I'm not spending on a smartphone or, you know, I had a smartphone for a while and I found my life wasn't as good with it.
Good for Jesse, but he's not living like most people live in this country, is he, Joshua?
Not quite, but you know, what he's saying really gets to the core of what the frustrations that a lot of cable customers feel and what motivates many people to cut the cord. Maybe they like their television content, but they find it's just really at the end of the day not worth it in paying that much money. And
it's a lot of money, isn't it?
Right.
Oh,
and now waiting through so much bad programming just to get what they want that they're better off just not dealing with it and mm-hmm. dealing with finding their culture elsewhere.
Yes.
But, you know, one of the problems here is that it can seem like there's a lot of bad programming and not a lot of good informative options on your cable system because the experience that you have there is totally controlled by what's in that device. With a more innovative device that truly allows searching across different platforms, you're not going to be at the mercy of whatever the cable provider decides to put in front of you or commercial breaks or what's on at a given time. with more online programming, it's more on demand and it's much more free flowing. So it would, could provide people with much better opportunities to find new content from new sources.
Yeah, good point. Mary asks you, please tell us how to leave comments on the FCC site about this issue. I'm unable to find the proper category. Thank you, Joshua, for this useful topic.
Sure. So unfortunately, the FCC hasn't actually quite opened the public comment process. Right.
Okay.
But it's expected to be within the next week or two. But all you'll have to do is go to FCC.gov, and right on their homepage, they have a link to submit comments. But right, it's actually not quite live yet. It's another one of the little quirks of the FCC process. They approve something, gets a lot of attention, and people are all excited, but then they take a few weeks to actually get it to the point where it's available for public comment.
Okay. Thank you, Jesse. It sounds like a good life you've got going there. Let's go to Arnie in Plainfield. Hi, Arnie.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is regarding, I thought within the last couple of years I had heard there's legislation been introduced regarding limiting the volume of commercials on TV. They seem to be, I would say, three times louder than normal programming, and it really is annoying. And is there anything in the works for that, or what can be done?
So I believe that there was something that the FCC did a few years ago on volume control within advertising. But, you know, the details of it escape me. But I'm pretty sure that the FCC, they're definitely on it. Whether they finalize those rules or not, I'm not sure. But that's definitely something that people have heard about. And that's one of the issues that really came to the attention of policymakers through this kind of public comment process. The FCC has a complaint process where people can come in, and I know for many years they have heard this complaint about the volume control and advertising, and that's really what motivated them to get involved in it. But I'm not sure where it is in the process right now.
Thanks, Arnie, for the call. Jenny in Madison, hi.
You're asking for Jenny?
Yeah.
Yes, I just wanted to say when Charter was and the FCC were making us get those boxes so that we could watch TV, I dumped Charter and I just bought the digital antennas. And, you know, I get 15 channels. I'm happy with that. And that's what I wanted to say. I get free TV.
Mm-hmm. Joshua.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's driving a lot of people to cut the cord. And that's really something that the cable companies are aware of. They, I think, in many ways realize that the days of the pay TV video service that they offer, those days are numbered. And that's why they're shifting so much of their resources over to the broadband internet service that many cable companies offer. They realize that eventually one day they're not going to be able to make so much money off of the TV service because people are leaving it in droves. They've alienated most of their customers, and they're hoping to find ways to add new fees to their broadband service so that they can stay alive once the video product kind of goes away. And we've actually seen from a lot of smaller cable providers, they're not even interested anymore in offering TV service. They just want to be a broadband company because they realize there are so many people out there like the caller who just don't even want to deal with it anymore.
Mm. Oh, I'll bet those big companies will find a way to stay alive, Joshua, don't you? I have no doubt about that.
They are survivors.
Yeah, they are. Thank you ever so much for being with us. It was highly informative, and it can be made to appear to be a difficult topic, but you've made it all understandable for us. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, we'll be with you again. Joshua Stagger is a policy counsel at the Open Technology Institute, specializing in telecommunications law and policy, looking at the Unlock the Box movement. This is amazing. How many of you knew that rental fees for those black boxes are bringing in, and we have to rent them, $20 billion in annual revenue for cable, satellite, and telephone companies? But all of that may change. We'll just see what happens in the months ahead. Thanks very much to Kendra Smith for producing this program and to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow, Brooke Gladstone of On the Media will be with us. We'll talk about what is the proper way to deal with the candidacy of someone like Donald Trump. Is he to be called out? Is there an objective way to cover that candidacy? We will talk about that with her and hear your thoughts on this as well. So you can critique what we've done, and we'll talk to her about all of this tomorrow. Thanks for listening.